It's 9:30 on the record. My name is Fiona. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday morning. Now, when we hear about dogs and other pets attacking other people, we often hear that the owner is charged or the pet is sadly put down. But did you know there's a lot more nuance to how that all plays out in court? A new book called Guilty Pigs is just about to hit our bookstores, and it delves into the history of animal law across Australia and the world. It breaks down all the different perspectives and things that come into play when the law relates to animals, both domestic and wild. To tell us more about the book and animal law itself, we're joined by co-author and animal law expert Katie Barnett. Thanks for joining me on the show this morning, Katie.
Thanks so much for having me on, Fiona. It's an absolute pleasure.
You're most welcome. But to start off with, could you explain what an animal law expert is?
So the interesting thing about animal law is that I suppose animals are so present in our life that we have laws which relate to all aspects. So we have animal laws which deal with wrongdoing and contracts. We have animal laws which deal with the criminal law and evidence. We have animal laws which deal with the government and the government's powers to make decisions and things like that. So right across the whole legal spectrum, there's laws which touch upon animals and upon our relationship with them.
So tell us a bit more about your new book, Guilty Pigs. What's it about?
So it is effectively a collection of stories about different areas of the law which touch upon animals. So, for example, Chapter 1 does involve a case involving a dog who gets put on death row and ends up in the High Court of Australia. But, for example, Chapter 2 centres around an escaped monkey and who owns the monkey. Listeners might have come across the IKEA monkey, who was the subject of a lot of memes and games a couple of years ago. So it kind of traces the story of that monkey through while discussing how the law works and things like that. So that's effectively how the book works.
And you co-wrote it with Jeremy Garnes. How did that collaboration come about?
So Jeremy and I are the co-editors of a High Court blog called Opinions on High. And we were having lunch one day and discussing the High Court case involving the biting dog. And I started to talk about some of the animal law cases I know, some really crazy ones where people left stuff on trust for their pets after they died. Jeremy started to talk about some of the cases he knew, and I said to him, look, you know, we could write a book on this. And he said, oh, I guess so. And I said, how about I kind of sketch it out? So that's what we ended up doing, and it turned into Guilty Pigs, which I really think is one of the most interesting and most fun things I've done as a legal academic.
You were saying that you both put together some of the weird and wonderful stories that you've heard about animal law, and reading the book, there were some that really took me back. Did you have to do much research to find all of these as well?
Yes. So we came up with the idea in 2017. Black Ink took us on in 2019, and we've probably been researching comprehensively since then. Some of the stories are crazy. Like, I think the one that gets everyone is the medieval French pigs who get put on trial for murder as if they're human and given legal counsel and things like that. And then they're treated really like they're human.
That's just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's extraordinary what it says about humans and about law and about culture. But there was just, I discovered things I'd never known about. For example, does the Queen own all the swans? Not quite. And things like that, things I'd never really thought about before.
You're listening to On The Record, and we're joined by Katie Barnett, co-author of the book Guilty Pigs, which delves into the history of animal law. Now, the book is broken up in different sections about owning animals, controlling animals, blaming, understanding, harming and protecting animals. Why did you decide to centre your chapters around these main topics?
I guess what we wanted to explore with the book is our relationship and the law's relationship with animals. So we wanted to look at, you know, what does it mean to say that we own an animal? It may be that a lot of people haven't really thought about that. And how do we own animals? What's the history of that? Where does that come from? Similarly, for example, with the chapter dealing with evidence law, understanding animals, how do we interpret animals if we're using their evidence in court? What kind of weight does a court put on that? I guess we were really interested in exploring the relationship between humanity, law, and non-human animals. I mean, we're animals too, of course. So that's the fascinating thing.
It definitely was interesting. I didn't realise all the nuances and different aspects that came into play when it came to pets and animals in the eyes of the law.
No. I mean, one of the... some of the fascinating things, for example, in divorce, you would... How do you deal with animals? And that's where you kind of get a bit of an intersection between way in which the law often thinks about animals is as property. But you can't divide up a dog, for example, like you can divide up a bank account. So it creates real difficulties for courts because they've got the power to divide property, but you can't divide up a dog. And then you think, well, do you treat the dog like a child? But unlike a more fully grown child, an animal can't necessarily express what it wants. But in some other parts of the world, which we explore in the book, the courts have taken a best interests of the animal approach. So that was really interesting.
It is really quite fascinating to see, even within Australia, the differences between what the council does and then with the federal, when that comes into play as well.
Yeah, so that's in the dog biting case. You've got all these layers of government. You've got the local council controlling the dog, and then you've got the state government passing legislation, and then you end up in the High Court in the kind of federal system. So it involves all levels of government in ways that I don't think people would necessarily have realised without unpicking that case. And there is a happy ending for Izzy the dog. She does end up escaping from death row and having a happy life elsewhere on a big farm. I should note, it wasn't actually clear that she'd done what was alleged. So, whereas one of the other dogs she was with was definitely, had definitely bitten people and bitten other dogs. So, yeah. So she ends up okay.
I also didn't realise that wild animals in some situations could be convicted similar to humans. You referenced a situation where a wild bear was imprisoned alongside human detainees. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's a crazy case. So during this, I came across this case in Kazakhstan where a wild bear called Kacha was imprisoned for mauling campers on two separate occasions. But the government didn't have enough space in the zoo, so they ended up putting Katja the bear in with prisoners in jail. And she stayed there for years, and the prisoners became extremely fond of her and all looked after her and were a bit sad when she got eventually moved to a zoo. So, and this is the current day. This is not medieval times. So that's one of the fascinating things, is I think the impulses which cause us not to quite know where to place animals are still at play. We don't know whether to look at animals as property, as more than property, some special kind of thing in between, or as actually on the level of humans. And there's this constant slippage in the way our culture and our law treats animals, and it just keeps going back and forth.
So what were some of the biggest challenges you faced while writing this book?
Some of the challenges were translation. So some of the sources I had to look into for the medieval stuff was in Latin or Law French, which is extremely difficult to understand. And I did get an Israeli case, and I ended up having to get a friend to help me translate some of that as well. So, so that was probably the hardest part, and also the really old sources. So I did quite a bit of the medieval stuff, but getting that was interesting and difficult, although the internet makes it a lot easier. But on one occasion, for example, I contacted an academic in the US who said, "It happens before COVID hit. I took a photo of this, so I'll send it to you." Yes! So, thank you to her.
So this morning we've been discussing your new book, Guilty Pigs, which delves into animal law and breaks it down so that everyone can understand. But just to end off, why is it important that we understand the law when it does come to animals?
So I think it's really important to think about where we stand in relation to animals and the environment and how our law deals with that and what it says about us. I mean, I'm a law lecturer. I like people knowing about the law generally anyway. But I think what's important about this book is it highlights our relationship with animals and some of the inconsistencies in it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the record this morning and telling us all about your book.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, and I really hope people enjoy it.
Thank you. That was co-author and animal law expert Katie Barnett telling us all about her new book, Guilty Pigs, a book which looks into the history of animal law in the past, but also today, and how it's a lot more complex than we think.